And hello, everyone, and thank you for joining the kickoff of the Interoperability Standards Work Group. I'm Mike Berry. I work for ONC, and we are pleased that you could be with us today. We'd like to thank our co-chairs, Stephen Lane and Arian Malik, for serving as co-chairs of this work group, and to all the work group members for lending their time and expertise. As a reminder, your feedback is always welcomed, which can be typed in the chat feature to everyone throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at approximately 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. So let's get started with our meeting. I'll now call the meeting to order and begin roll call of our work group members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. Let's start with our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
Good morning. I'm here.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich.
Morning, everyone.
Hans Wootendyke.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Christine Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Adi Gundlapalli.
Good morning.
Raj Gavarti.
Hey, good morning.
Jim Gerges.
Good morning.
And Kamoto. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Morning.
David McCauley.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald.
Good morning.
Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Charan.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you. Now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arian for their opening remarks.
Well, thank you all for joining us. You want to start, Arian? Go ahead.
No, I was like, hey, opening remarks. Go for it, Steve.
Well, I just want to welcome everybody to our new work group. This is very exciting to be with you all this morning and to start in on this important work under the auspices of the ONC. Many of you have been with us through prior task forces that have focused on a similar scope of work. We are combining the US CDI task force and the interoperability standards. Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. Yes, there were two different task forces that we've been running in parallel for the past few years that are now being combined into this work group. So I think we've had our status in the FACA hierarchy somewhat elevated. We have a larger group with, as I say, a number of you who've been with us before and a number of new participants. So we're really excited to dig in with all of you. And we've got a pretty quick timeline to turn around a lot of deliverables. So there will be a fair bit of homework and out of band work that we'll all be engaged in, and looking forward to all of that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think as Stephen said, we're combining these charges because it just made sense that we interoperate via standards. The data that is collected and normalized under the US CDI, and so it really does make sense for these two formerly separate work groups to combine charges and really set a floor for the nation in terms of data and exchange. Should we go to introductions?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. We're going to redisplay the roster here, and we're just going to go down the roster and let people introduce themselves. Since I'm at the top, I'll go right ahead. So I'm a practicing primary care family physician and clinical informaticist at Sutter Health. My informatics focus has very much been on interoperability for the past 15 years. And like many of you, I have the chance to sit on the HITAC. I also serve currently as the chair of the Sequoia Project, the chair of the Care Quality Steering Committee, and work on a number of other national and regional initiatives to support interoperability. So I live and breathe this stuff.
Cool. Arian Malik, I lead up our R&D teams at Change Healthcare. that support our large-scale information exchanges, including the clearinghouses, our clinical exchanges, including Commonwealth, as well as pharmacy adjudication. I've had a number of years in life sciences and healthcare, starting out first in clinical trials, and then using informatics to advance oncology trials, and then had a big long run on patient engagement, interoperability, information exchange that has never really ended. And may it not end. So this is the latest incarnation of that work. Why don't we turn it over to Kelly?
Hi, everyone. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm an informatics nurse specialist. I work at Vanderbilt as the associate professor and director of innovation in informatics, as well as the chief clinical officer at the Center for Medical Interoperability. Been there for a number of years where we have been working on how to seamlessly exchange from a platform medical device information with a test certification lab. Prior to that, I was with HCA as the CNIO, working mostly in medical device interoperability. This is, I think, my fourth or fifth ONC committee that I've been on, but new to this group, so really glad to join the group. And so thanks for having me.
Hans is having some technical difficulties, so we'll come back to him when he figures out how to connect his audio. Thomas, are you on? All right, Christina.
Hey, everyone. I'm Christina Caraballo. I'm a senior director of informatics at HIMSS. Part of my portfolio is to have strategic oversight of things such as the interoperability showcase, our immunization integration program, and our interoperability and health information exchange community, which includes groups such as work in social determinants of health and health information exchange in general. I've also been a past member of the HITECH and was co-chair of USCDI task force a couple years ago. So very excited to be back and continue this work. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you, Christina. Hans is back. Hans, why don't you go ahead? All right, Hans is not back.
Grace. We had hoped.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Grace Cordovano. I'm a board certified patient advocate specializing in the oncology space. My day-to-day is working with patients and their families from point of diagnosis through survivorship or end of life care planning. Much of the work that I do is rooted in access to medical records and seamless, actionable, interoperable access. I previously had the opportunity to work with the USCDI task force last session. I also am on the HIMSS Public Policy Committee. I help with the HL7 Patient Empowerment Group and recently started working on including the patient perspective in the protecting privacy to promote interoperability. So I'm really looking forward to working with all of you on draft V3.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Grace. Now Hans is in, I think. Yes.
I think, so. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right, finally got it to work. Sorry about that. Hans Buitendijk, I am Director of Interoperability Strategy with Cerner, focusing on our interactions and engagement with the industry, working together there. I've been active for a number of years, sometimes it feels like decades, in interoperability. Initially focused on standards development, still very active in HL7 to develop standards, have been in various leadership roles there as well on the organization overall. Over time, I progressed to participate as Commonwealth Care Quality started to emerge to participate in that. Currently, I'm on the board of Care Quality and a member of the steering committee, active in a couple of different groups in Commonwealth. Within HL7, active co-chair of one of the work groups, plus a number of other activities around fire management group, et cetera. Working with the EHRA, collaborating with other EHR vendors, where I'm currently the chair of the EHRA, plus the chair of the standards and interoperability work group, where we're trying to work together to help progress the interoperability and general EHR HIT space as well. So looking forward to this discussion. Have been active with the USCDI in the last round. And I think it's a great idea that the two aspects, USCDI, et cetera, plus standards, that they are being looked at together in harmony. So looking forward to working with everybody.
Thank you, Hans. All right, Stephen Eichner. We have a Stephen overload.
Good morning, and thank you. My name is Steve Eichner. I'm the health IT lead for the Texas Department of State Health Services. I've been actively engaged in collaborations between public health and private sector, supporting data exchange, both for registry and patient care information. Long time work in looking at the integration of behavioral health and primary health care, as well as work in rare disease research and patient registries. And I'm very happy to be here, and I'm very looking forward very much to advancing interoperability. Thanks much.
Thank you, Stephen. Adi?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Adi Gunlapalli from CDC. I'm an informatician and infectious disease physician, Chief Public Health Informatics Officer at the Center for Surveillance, Epidemiology, and Laboratory Services at CDC. My office provides strategic public health informatics leadership to the agency, supports public health data modernization efforts, and promotes interoperability and use of data standards. And so really honored to be here and part of the group. As you all know, interoperability is what seems to be a never-ending journey. And it would be great to have and reach some tangible and much needed milestones, especially for public health. Thank you.
Indeed, I think we've all learned quite suddenly and then quite slowly that interoperability is important over the last couple of years. Rajesh.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Raj from MCG Health, serving as Associate Vice President of Technology and Interoperability. My last 18 years of experience has been around clinical decision support, and primarily in the providers and payers space dealing with the clinical decision support. For the last few years, I have been actively engaged with HL7 groups, primarily on the DaVinci side, dealing with the clinical data exchange on various use cases. I have had tons of experience dealing with the prior authorization related standards defining, and I'm a co-lead in the HL7 groups in some of the committees, writing the specs, and also the member of the VD group working on the electronic data exchange and policies. And I'm very honored to be part of this group and looking forward to work on the next set of specs on the USCDI.
Fantastic, Raj. Good times to be working on EPA. Jim Jurgis.
Yeah, hey, Jim Jurgis. I'm a member of HITAC. I've been working for a few years now on several of these task forces. Work for HCA. We're in 22 different states, 44, 45 markets. So we get a good sense of some of the variation in how people interpret standards, et cetera. So very much looking forward to this combined now work group.
Cool. Thank you. Ken. No, Ken. Les.
Hi, Les Leonard. I'm the Assistant Provost for Data Science and Informatics at the Medical University of South Carolina. And I'm also a professor of internal medicine there. I'm also the Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of Health Sciences South Carolina, which is a statewide health information exchange and research collaborative. At HSSE and at MUSC, I do research in interoperability, particularly focused on fire population health applications of that, and on translational informatics, accelerating translation from the research results into the healthcare system through informatics.
Thank you. Hung?
Hi, I'm a hematopathologist and clinical informaticist at UT Southwestern Medical Center, and I currently serve as Director of Clinical Pathology for Children's Health, a pediatric healthcare system in Dallas, Texas. I'm also a member of the College of American Pathologists and have been serving as the delegate to the FDA SHIELD initiative, I was involved in crafting the implementation plan. And some of you might not be aware, but the SHIELD initiative is a to promote laboratory data interoperability. And I'm happy to be on this task force and looking forward to contributing what I can.
Fantastic. Yes, an earlier incarnation of the ISP task force recommended that FDA and ONC and CDC and CMS collaborate on lab interoperability starting at the source. So that is fantastic. David.
David, you're on mute.
You'd think I'd know how to operate these things by now. David McCauley, I'm an individual, but I, before becoming an individual, I spent a career in informatics at Cerner. I started at Boston Children's, where I got my training, studied neurology. Then I joined Cerner and spent about almost 30 years there working on a variety of product development areas. But with most focus on interoperability. I was an original member of the HIT Standards Committee and a co-founder, along with Arian, of Commonwell, and I've basically spent a career focused on trying to improve some of these thorny interoperability issues, and I'm glad to have a shot at doing some more. I'm retired now, don't actively participate in a financial sense in the industry any longer.
He keeps trying to get out and we keep trying to pull him back in. Clem.
Yeah, I'm Clem McDonald. And I think I told people about who I was in a previous meeting. I don't need to repeat it, but right now I'm the Chief Data, the Clinical Data Standards Officer at NLM. And we're building tools. You know, we have a UCM validator that now is getting 500 million hits a year. We've got tools for the questionnaire. We have implemented the questionnaire of FHIR, which has been downloaded 100,000 times. And we're doing a lot of different things in that space. And as others on the committee say, like David, I've been at it for a long, long time and kind of eager to see this stuff work even better than it's done. But it's come a long way. In the last couple of years, I think we've really made a lot of progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Clem. Aaron.
Good morning, Aaron Meary, the Chief Digital Officer for Baptist Health here in Florida. And did you know today is National Florida Day? This is the day the 27th state joined the union. So FYI, factoid. I am the co-chair of the HITAC, was a previous member of the Health IT Policy Committee. I serve on the board of Commonwealth. I do a whole lot around interoperability. Love this stuff. Love where rubber meets the road. And more importantly, how can we affect change for the country? But then also in my day job, how can we help Northern Florida and Southern Georgia really, truly be interoperable and a much better experience for all? Look forward to joining.
Thank you, Aaron. Mark.
Good morning, Mark Savage. I was on the USCDI task force and actually many task forces over the past eight to 10 years. Also the policy lead for the Gravity Project, working on standardized content and exchange for social determinants of health, and a part of USCDI version at this point. Generally channeling the patient, consumer, community perspective, along with with the other perspectives on the ecosystem, special interest in health equity. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark. Michelle?
Hi, good morning to everybody. I'm Michelle Schreiber. I am the Deputy Director of the Clinical Standards and Quality Group at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and also the director of the Quality Measures and Value-Based Incentives Group. I'm a general internal medicine physician by background, having implemented many EMR systems in my day at that time. I have the honor of sitting on the HITAC committee and was part of the USCDI committee before this, and it's my group at CMS actually that stewards the Promoting Interoperability Program and that helps work across CMS actually on interoperability issues. I'm a personal believer in moving us to fully digital quality measures. It's been one of the things we've been driving at CMS. And as such, we're also working across all our federal partners on USCDI Plus for quality measures. And I'm delighted to join this group. So thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you. This has been a passion project for me, the notion that, you know, wouldn't it be pretty cool if we could take the clinical output of providing care and just get the CQMs for free, as it were, as opposed to doing extra special work. Abby.
Hi, thank you. Let's see, I'm a member of HITECH. First of all, I'm the CEO at OCHIN. We're an organization that does software as a service, specifically with safety net providers across the country. We are probably most well known for our research division and for the hosting of EPIC that we do across the country. We host a single master patient index of EPIC with almost 200 unique organizations in 28 states. So Jim, we have a unique perspective because we're moving data all across the country in a lot of unique environments. Our patients are 50% Medicaid and 27% uninsured. A third of them have English as a second language. Two-thirds of them have a chronic disease, and then another 60% of that have a significant mental health diagnosis as well. So we focus on a very comprehensive set of care. I sit on HITECH. We're very interested in helping to move data and thinking about it from an equity standpoint. And a more culturally competent approach as well. So I sit on HITECH, we sit on the NQF, we sit on HL7, we're on the Gravity Project. We are one of the five domains for the NIH Ames Project that just got awarded. We are a PCORI data node, and we sit on the Sequoia board as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Abby. And Ram.
Yeah, this is Ram Sriram. I'm with the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and I'm a representative of NIST to HITECH. I've been leading the NIST Health IT program for several years, and we kind of do two things, the clinical informatics and the bioinformatics. In terms of clinical informatics, we have been working on developing the test methods and tools for certifying EHRs for quite some time, starting with the 2009 HITECH Act. So we are interested in developing testing tools and techniques for testing interoperability across the enterprise. In addition to that, we also have developed some R&D and deployment of security protocols, again, for the health IT network. So we also do other kinds of things in terms of some fundamental research in how the biological pathways work and what kinds of representations you have. And my specific interest is more in terms of the ontologies and the semantics aspects of representing information. That's my day job. And my weekend job is to help my wife, who has a small medical practice, and she has an EHR, doing interoperability in a small medical practice using an EHR, which is not very big, is a challenge.
Thank you. And thanks for combining theory and practice. Well, I can confidently say that if we do not solve interoperability in this work group, it is not for lack of talent and expertise. This is a pretty impressive team. And I think our only challenge is going to be finding the areas of focus that we can go we can go make significant progress on. So, Stephen, back over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. This is an amazing team of folks, both the returning members and the new members. I really want to especially welcome Kelly and Hung, who I think are the only ones who are totally new to this particular effort. I'm not sure, Jim, whether you were with us last time. I can't remember, but thank you to everybody. Oh, and Raj as well. Thank you to everybody who's joining this group and contributing your expertise. I also want to give a welcome to the members of the public who are joining us. Thank you all for dialing in and for being interested. And I believe the chat function does allow participation by members of the public. I'm not 100% sure, but from our end, we have the opportunity to communicate with everyone or just our hosts and panelists. So let's go ahead and dive in. We're going to talk about our charges and timelines. If we can go to the next slide, I will just review the charges that we have for our work group over our work this year. The overarching charge is to review and provide recommendations on draft USCDI version 3, as well as the interoperability standards that support interoperability, specifically the ISA. So specifically, to drill into that, our first charge and our first area of focus will be to evaluate the draft USCDI version 3 that was recently published and to provide recommendations back to the HITACH, both regarding new data classes and elements that have been proposed in the draft version 3, as well as looking at level 2 data classes that were not included in draft version 3, if we feel that some of those really would be important to include in the final version 3 that will be published later this year. And as you can see, our due date for this is the middle of April. So we have a lot of work to do between now and then on this charge. Our second charge will be to identify opportunities to update the ONC Interoperability Standards Advisory, or the ISA as we will call it, to address HITACH priority uses of health IT, including related standards and implementation specifications. So this is important. We're interested not only in the data elements and classes, but also in the supporting data standards and specifications. And we will be diving into that and what it means to have supporting standards and specifications, and what are the criteria for those to allow items to move forward into either this version 3 of USCDI or a future version. So moving on to the next slide, we're going to drill in a little bit deeper on those specific charges. The first one, again, looking at the draft version 3, what was included, what wasn't included, and providing input about that. There are some potential areas of specific focus that ONC called for on the draft version 3 content. Specifically, are there any improvements needed in the data classes or elements that were included in the draft version 3? So ONC has a process. They look at all of the submissions. They level those. That is to say, they determine based on their level of maturity and use in the community, whether they are a comment level, level 1, level 2, or level 3, comment level 1 or level 2, and then out of level 2, those that are felt to be sufficiently mature to advance, they select a subset to include in the draft, and then we will provide feedback as to whether the appropriate subset was selected. So the appropriate and meaningful data class and element names and definitions are something that we're going to review. Did they pick the right classes? Did they name them appropriately, define them appropriately? Is there anything that needs to be refined there? And then we've been asked to suggest representative examples of value sets that have been used by health IT developers and implementers to really fully understand the intent of these data elements. So we're going to want to dig pretty deeply into each of those. Then there's the question of, should other data elements that are currently classified as level 2 but not included in the draft version 3, should those be added or substituted for any of the elements that were included in draft version 3? And if so, why? So this is, we're going to need you to think deeply about what was and was not included from level 2. And then identifying significant barriers to the development, implementation, or use of any of the draft V3 data elements that would suggest that perhaps they're really not ready to be included. So what should be subtracted, what should be added, and drilling down deeply into each of those. So that's what we're going to be doing with draft version 3. On the next slide, within the publications that the ONC put out last week, there were some specific requests for additional feedback on what was included in draft version 3. One was related to sex assigned at birth. There has been a lot of work done by a group called the Gender Harmony Project in looking in a deep, detailed way about how to specify gender information. There's a specific question about a data element called recorded sex or gender. We've reached out to the folks from Gender Harmony and asked them if they might be willing to come and give us a presentation about where they've been and their recommendations. Steve Posnack has been very much involved in that, and we're looking forward to digging into that question. The question specifically as to whether we should realign the ONC value set with that has been proposed by Gender Harmony, which I think is something we should seriously consider. And then also most of you are probably aware of the Project USA or USAT, which was published fairly recently by ONC. And then the question of whether that new standard should be incorporated into the USCDI as a standard for documenting the current and previous patient addresses. And a good reminder here, we say Project USA, we don't say Project USAT. So that is the additional information that we've been asked to provide on USCDI. And then Arian, do you want to talk about the ISA? So the next slide.
I can get off of mute. Absolutely. So we have a pretty brutal schedule for USCDI, and just as soon as we get our arms around that, we'll have a pretty brutal schedule for the ISA. So we'd like to make some progress here. We had an early discussion on how to prioritize the ISA charge. There is an almost infinite set of things that we could concentrate on. But we believe that given the recent announcement of the TEFCA, and in particular of the FHIR roadmap, it would be useful to contemplate what a FHIR roadmap might be to do a standards assessment and make recommendations in this area. And then secondarily, look at exchange purposes that were contemplated in cures, but not currently in the TEFCA, to be able to provide some air cover and runway. And then contemplate what potential standards or implementation guidance might be useful for certification. Generally, when we think about the ISA, as well as in USCDI, you know, our focus is what's the stuff that wants to happen 1 or 2 years out, where it would be useful to do some work now that paves the way or prepares the way for the world of the future. We made some recommendations in the last incarnation of the ISP on SDOH standards. In particular, we want to take another look at gravity standards for interoperability. And then there's a sort of quasi-urgent area here in vocabulary subsets, as I think people are aware. We have an OMB vocabulary that's fairly constrained, and then a CDC vocabulary that is incredibly exhaustive. And it might be useful to look for a subset vocabulary that is slightly more expansive than the OMB vocabulary, but more constrained than the full CDC vocabulary, in order to address social determinants of health, better localize community impact for epidemics, et cetera. We've already mentioned the SHIELD project, but as I said, in earlier incarnations of this work group, we made recommendations related to orders and results and looking at all the way back to LIS and IVD, all the way through to bilateral orders and results. So the axis of information from clinical order through to analyte and reporting, and then from there back to the clinician as well as to public health, seems like a fertile area for exploration, particularly given the SHIELD project and given some of the very public challenges we've had in getting, for example, demographic and contact information for public health reporting. And then relating to CDC, potentially data system certification and ECR standards as potential certification measures for public health reporting. We probably shouldn't call it CDC, we probably should be calling that public health reporting, but there's a set of standards and certification that likely want to happen. It would be useful to be able to clarify standards readiness in this space. I believe that is, do we have one more slide here?
Or do we? I think that's it before we hand it over to Al. Yeah.
Thank you. So that's a tentative set of potential topic areas. We certainly are open to work group feedback about other priority areas. As usual, although it seems like between now and June is a large amount of time, we will be hard pressed to make significant progress even in this highly constrained set of areas. So definitely open for swapping out items or adding additional priority items, but just let's remember that it takes a lot of work to go through each one of these. All right, and with that, we are going to turn it over to Al to talk through USCDI Plus.
Actually, just before USCDI we go there, I did want to make a comment. I'm very excited, especially that Hung Lu is here with his experience in the SHIELD project and lab interoperability. This has been a real challenge for our community over the past multiple iterations of these meetings. And I think that it will be very helpful for us to dig deeply into that area when the time is right in our second phase, I believe, to see what if anything we can do to further unjam those logs that are getting in the way of interoperability of orders and results.
Absolutely. All right, Al. USCDI V3.
Christina had a question. I'm going to defer to her.
There it is. Thanks, Al. Christina?
I was just wondering, thank you. I was wondering if we were pausing here for discussion on the priorities of the ISA phase, or did we want to table that for later?
It's a good call. We probably should have some discussion of the overall charge of the work group. I don't know that we have time right now to go deep on the ISA charge. And given the timeline, I think we're going to focus first on the USCDI V3 do a longer run at the ISA. But it might be worthwhile at the end of the call to contemplate how we can do some of that long running work. And maybe create a task force, a sub work group task force that can concentrate on firming out the charge for the ISA portion and making some progress against it. Are there any other questions on the overall charge of the task force, either relating to USCDI and USCDI V3 or relating to the ISA portion?
And Steve, thank you for your comment about engagement and public health certification.
My pleasure. I guess just briefly looking at broad discussions about what's on the charge for the subcommittee and how we want to address the different topics, whether we want to roll out or can roll out task forces or subcommittees or whatever, probably would be a good idea, if not today, at some point, or even just create a roster of who's interested in what based on the information shared today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we all know from previous work that trying to get all the work done in the main meetings is a little bit of a futile errand. And so creating smaller groups that can go make progress offline and then come back and take their work to the full work group is a useful approach. Any other questions?
Arian.
David.
Not a question looking back, but looking forward to Al's presentation on USCDI, just to cue up that some of us who haven't worked deeply with USCDI would like to be reminded of the impact of USCDI. In other words, what is the effect of the decisions that we'll be debating? I know we'll dive right into all the mechanisms of how USCDI works, but what happens when we make something in the USCDI? I would love to get a quick overview of that at some
point. Got it. Maybe Al, we can ask you at the beginning of your presentation to remind us all about the certification or programmatic impact not being in the USCDI.
Sure.
And I think the other seed, Al, to place for your presentation, which we'll then let you get on with, is the whole question of USCDI Plus and how does that fit into the work that we're going to be doing, or how is that separated from it, so that we know that up front.
Okay.
Well, why don't we let Al go, and then we'll open it up for discussion at the end of Al's presentation, both around USCDI and about the larger charge from the task force.
Great. Thanks, Aaron and Steve, and I'm glad to be part of this work group again. Previously was the technical lead, not the technical lead on the USCDI task force over the last 2 years, continue to serve as the technical lead for USCDI development in ONC in the Office of Technology. Next slide. So this is the first couple slides are background, and I can touch on the impact of changes to USCDI as I go through these. But some key features of USCDI is that it's a core set, and it's that generally it's structured or unstructured data, and the intent is to support patient care and patient access to their data. It's designed as a consistent baseline, and by that means it's a reliable baseline that people can understand and trust to see where they're starting from, whether that starting point meets all of their data requirements in their particular arenas or not. It's at least a relatively stable baseline. That stable baseline, though, does evolve over time. And it evolves over time using a process that we defined about 2 years ago as part of the 21st Century Cures Act final rule that we put out in 2020. And so that most of the update process is based on that process that we established. Next slide. So the collaborative process that we talked about is based on public input into what ought to be added to USCDI and what ought to be changed to USCDI with each subsequent version, which we're publishing now on an annual basis and plan to do so. That public input is evaluated by ONC based on a set of rules that was developed both internally and with feedback from the HITACH, from this group, in its previous versions, and to determine the maturity, the extent of use, and the applicability of data elements that the public feels ought to be collected across all EHRs and exchanged between all EHRs. So the first set of priority, so amongst the data elements that are submitted, and we have so far have had over 1,000 data elements submitted for consideration for addition to USCDI. And of those, we have established that a certain set of those are the more mature, more broadly applicable to the general health IT and healthcare community. So those level two data elements are further evaluated to determine which of those gets to be in the next version of USCDI. And that prioritization criteria initially, when we published our version two last year, I'm sorry, not last year, but we did publish it last year. So those are, basically there's a set of data needs that are across that are generally that those data elements that are not already part of USCDI. I call them gaps, although other people would call them just additional data needs for the broader community. And we want data. We want to add data elements that are not too difficult to specify, which means that it would be relatively easy for
developers and implementers and providers to use in their respective settings. Because the US CDI data elements are exchanged using two primary exchange specifications, that's US Core or FHIR, and the CCDA structured documents. We are also mindful of the burdens of development of those standards, and that's been brought up as because it's necessary to use those exchange standards to handle US CDI, we want to make sure that we're not causing undue burden on the development of those updated standards. And then overall, with each change, with each version of US CDI, we want to make sure that we want to try to ensure that the overall burden of whatever certain number of data elements that we want to add to US CDI is not an overwhelming amount. And the reason that we want to do that is because we want to promote this incremental adoption of this new set of data elements with each version. New versions of US CDI, once they become available for update, those are voluntary changes. So systems can decide if they want to update to, say, a version 2 at some point in the future or version 3 at some point in the farther down the road. We feel like these updates are appropriate and important for a broad variety of settings. And so we want developers to develop these updates, to implement the updates, and to provide those updates to their customers. And so we are looking at relatively modest changes to each version of US CDI, as opposed to adding a certain number of data elements with each version. And then someday down the road, when we put these changes into a potential new rule, which could very well happen sometime in the future, once a new rule comes out, those changes are actually going to be required for all systems to be able to update. And so systems that have been updating incrementally over time, over each year with each version, will be in a better position to update to the new final rule whenever that comes out in the future. And so overall, we may have a lot of high quality data elements that there are a lot of high quality data elements that could be considered, but we can't add all of them to serve that need for this modest aggregate interval lift. I'm going to stop there for a second and ask Rajesh, who has his hand raised, and then Mark.
So probably it's a process question. So when I looked at the prioritization criteria, then looking at the annual report where we looked at the immediate opportunities in the interoperability section, as an example, exchange of data for transitions of care and a couple of other things. So how does these priorities intersect between what we said in annual report versus how we are defining the priorities in US CDI?
Are you talking about the high-tech annual report?
Yeah.
So the recommendations for priorities, if we're talking about the priorities that were set by the high-tech recommendations last year, those priorities were adopted, and they're reflected by the prioritization criteria that were specific to version 3 that's listed below. Almost verbatim, we adopted those new prioritization criteria and applied them to what would become the draft V3, which I'm about to talk about.
Okay.
And Al, we have, there's a question in the chat from David. And
I got it.
Now three hands up.
To answer David's question, the rule, I guess the first thing that to say is that US CDI, the subsequent versions of US CDI is not a rule. The subsequent version, so version 2 and version 3, are new version updates that at some point in the future can be voluntarily adopted by health IT developers and providing those updates to their customers. It is not a requirement that any system updates their capabilities to what was published in version 2 and what will eventually be published in version 3 later this year. We have a process called the Standards Version Advancement Process, which is currently considering USCDI version 2. And if that advancement process, identifies USCDI version 2 as an available standard for update, just like it will consider the upcoming FireUS Core 4.0.1, which adopts those changes in USCDI, systems can, if they both come out in the summer, systems can then voluntarily update their systems to USCDI version 3, but it is not required in any way that the systems do that update to version 2 and then sometime next year, version 3. Not until we come out with the new final rule like we did that introduced USCDI version 1. USCDI version 1 is required of all certified health IT. And then by the end of this year, at the end of December of this year, systems will be required to have certified to the USCDI version 1. And so that's the requirement. And nothing else after USCDI version 1 is yet to be required. It's only voluntary. So let me ask Mark, let me go back to Mark's question, because I think he was next in line for asking the question.
Hey, Mark? Yeah, one more question about the impact of USCDI inclusion. Can you comment on... This is Grace's question, but I think Grace speaks for all of us. Can you comment on the overlap between, or the tie between USCDI and information blocking? And in particular, between USCDI V3 and the work that we contemplate and its potential impact on information blocking.
I can touch on information blocking, but it's a little bit of a deep. I don't want to say rabbit hole, but it's a complicated topic. But as most people know, there's blocking of information exchange is under most circumstances is subject to penalties for blocking. There are exceptions to blocking for various reasons, which we won't get into. And the amount of information that would be, if blocked, would comprise information blocking is that information that is part of USCDI version 1. So there's a lot of data that's out there that could be exchanged that's not part of USCDI version 1. But at this current time, blocking that information would not be subject to civil penalties. But blocking the content that's in USCDI would be currently. Now that changes. in October, whereby any electronic information that's managed by a system must be exchanged, without permitted exceptions. And that's it doesn't fully explain the information blocking in version 1, but it's a start. Now, regarding version 2 and version 3, there's no relationship at all between information blocking and version 2 and version 3, because none of them are required to be their systems to be updated. There's going to be the extent of information that's subject to the information blocking provisions is much broader than version 1, version 2, and version 3 anyhow. So there's not a direct relationship between what's in version 2 and version 3 and information blocking.
Al, I'm a little concerned that if we take questions as we go along, we're never going to get through your materials. I appreciate the hands that are up. Is anyone going to blow a gasket if we let Al go ahead for a few slides and get some of this out on the table? Mark, Clem, you guys are okay for now?
Yes.
Great. Why don't you go ahead, Alan? We'll stack up the questions for after you're done.
Okay, sounds good. So in addition to the prioritization criteria that we mentioned before, we also adopted these additional prioritization criteria that were, number one, outlined by the recommendations from the USCDI task force to the HITECH, passed along to the national coordinator. In addition to, and this was actually, those prioritization criteria were established even before the new administration came in and set guidelines to that informed our adoption of these standards. So equity, reduction of disparities, reduction of discrimination based on race, ethnicity, and plus sexual orientation, gender identity, those were all laid out in executive orders that were published on the first day of the administration. And they were also, but we had already adopted and published these prioritization criteria for that addressed inequities and disparities, that addressed the needs of underserved stakeholders, and specifically addressed unique public health reporting, investigation, and emergency responses. So all of these priorities combined, all eight of these, were taken into consideration to look at this list of about 150 data elements that were considered level two, both that were submitted last year and this year for the version three cycle. We considered about 150 data elements for inclusion in version three. Next slide, please. So this is just a summary of what I talked about. We had over 400 submissions that were either recommendations for new data elements or recommendations on data elements that were submitted last year. So over 400 entries advocating for particular data elements, data classes, a total of about 40. There's about 42 submitters. So some submitted for just comments on last year's and some for this year's. But we had a significant amount of participation from the community and quite a few entries for us to consider. Next slide, please. So here it is. And I think we've all read about it. We came out last Thursday with the new draft USCDI version 3, introduced two new data classes and a total of 20 new data elements. The two new data classes are health insurance information and several different and seven data elements around health insurance information, including coverage and then identifiers related to coverage. There's a new data class called health status, and what this health status is kind of a merge of several other data classes and data concepts. We had as you know, health concerns was its own data class with its own single data element in it. And so to broaden this scope of health status was to recognize that other things besides health concerns were things that could be measured and determine a course of action for clinical care, but weren't necessarily clinic or a health concern, but rather things like functional status, which is really just a determination of status, disability status, the same mental function, and pregnancy status, all are new elements that are not quite health concerns, but are just things that need to be assessed over the course of time. And the little iconography, let me just do a quick intro of the icons that we used. We added data elements to draft V3 for several different reasons. One of them is, did it address this concern about equality, disparities, and underserved communities? Did it address particular public health concerns, particularly in the face of the pandemic? And those are indicated by the little bug under a magnifying glass. And then the two that are in gold are things that we considered, that ONC considered not because necessarily somebody submitted them, although these were submitted, but these are data elements that are already required as part of existing certification. And so certified health IT is already collecting and in most cases exchanging these data, and therefore there's essentially no lift for developers and implementers and providers to capture and exchange these data. And so just to sort of level things up to where we already are in certification, we added several different data elements. And then other ones were more general, like the laboratory data. These were more like gaps in USCDI that had some clinical relevance to it. And so we added those as well. Next slide, please. This is an overall view of draft USCDI version 3, and the little gold stars indicate new data classes or new data elements. And then, as you can see in the health status data class, we rearranged some of the data elements into the health status, including we merged the health concern data element and the smoking status data element into this health status, into the health status data class. Doesn't change the characteristics of each of these two data elements. Doesn't affect the applicable standards for each one of them, but it just rearranges them into a more logical collection of data elements in the same sort of concept area. These are the rest of the data elements didn't change, although we did add some additional information in the final product, the final USCDI draft B3. Next slide, please. So just quickly touch on, and I discussed a lot of this before. So these are the data elements that were added in the health insurance information data class. And so they sort of speak for themselves. We added specific definitions to the data elements. We added more definitions to the data elements this time around than we did in the past. And where appropriate, where it was clearly identified that there's a specific set of values that define those data elements. So different value sets, we added those to the applicable vocabulary standards category. And what this means for adoption is that developers who want to implement these new data elements can use these value sets as guides to what the capabilities ought to be. What the systems ought to have as far as capabilities go. And most likely these value sets will be part of the test data for when systems do their updates. They'll be tested against the content of these value sets, most likely. That hasn't been finalized yet, but most likely our test data for certification or for update will be based on these value sets. Next slide. The other one is health status. Like I said, we reclassified health concern and smoking status, and added disability status, mental function, functional status, and pregnancy status. And there clearly is some overlap between disability status, mental function, and functional status, but we thought that they were specific enough areas that warranted addition that we did split them up into those. But certainly there's some overlap between, especially these three, the disability, mental function, and functional status. Next slide, please. Two new additional data elements in under laboratory, the specimen type and result status were added, partially reflecting the specific data requirements around in vitro diagnostic testing. That has been critically important in the pandemic response. Next slide. We added several new patient demographics data elements, including date of death, tribal affiliation, two new concepts of related person name and relationship. And this is this originally came in as a next of kin data element, but because there's additional relationships of people that are involved with the care of a patient. They could be a custodian. They could be a parent or other caregiver. Could be a power of attorney. All of these related person, related by a variety of things, including blood and legal relationships, can be involved in the patient's care. And then this allows for that formal identification of these related persons. And two new data elements in under demographics for related to occupation. This is we have been considering adding employment information to USCDI ever since our 2015 rulemaking process. Whether we're looking at employment status, and the evolution of the new data model called Occupational Data for Health, which is developed by NIOSH at the CDC. This addresses a variety of different data needs and use cases around employment. And in particular, I wanted to point out that occupational data for health also includes military service as an employment status, if you will. And so we felt like this also addressed the concerns that were raised way back in 2015 for addressing military service and veteran status as well. And these two data sets are defined by NIOSH, and they're available on FinVAD's website. And again, these value sets would be likely to be used for assisting with implementation of these new data elements. Let me answer David's question about the value sets, because it popped up. The value sets were defined, by robustly specified, they are a specific list of data elements, terms. And you can look up each of these value sets in their respective locations, but they are, there is a finite list, they are all finite lists of terms that are generally carried within a particular mock standard. And in this case, the ODH standard defines all of the members of the value sets that are listed here. We are looking for input into into whether or not this is the most appropriate, or the other value sets that are identified are the most appropriate value set. And could those value sets be expanded or changed, or just the value set itself could be changed to a different value set, or the value set itself can be expanded. Next slide. And then this one was simply added because it's a requirement under certification for certain settings, and reason for referral is part of the transition to care, the transition to care certification requirement. And so it was added. Again, these are systems generally is already capable of managing, capturing and exchanging reason for referral. And so we added it as well. And that is the last data element in draft V3, the difference, the delta. Next slide, please.
Al, do you have a couple of hands up?
I thought we were going to save those were the same two hands that were up, unless they'd come up again. Mark and Clem, is that the case, or do you want to hold your questions to the end?
I'm holding.
Yeah, we can hold a little bit. Yeah, I just as long as I get a shot.
We got you. We're not going to, we got you. And as we had done before, we've updated the applicable vocabulary standards. These are the standards that can also be voluntarily updated by systems at any version, with each new version, to meet the needs of their customers. And so as we had done before, and as we plan to do when we publish our final USCDI version 3 in the summer, is to have the applicable vocabulary standards be the most recent updates at the time of publication. And so our intent is to do that again for the USCDI V3 final. Next slide. this is a reminder about the timeline, and this touches a little bit on what David McKelly was talking about earlier. So here we are in the timeline. We're actually now into 2022. It's time to start adding stuff to the right of this. But we're here in January. We just published the V2 draft, and we're in this red and dark blue cycle of having the high tech in this work group look at the content of draft V3 and make recommendations. We're also looking for public comment on the same subjects, the ones that the particular elements that we added to that were discussed earlier. We were talking about the charge related to USCDI. And then at the end of April, so the high tech has a little bit less time than the general public does for making comments on draft V3. But at the end of April begins our internal review process. We're going to look at all the recommendations. We're going to look at all of the public comments and decide, what of draft V3 ought to be changed or what is sustained. And then the plan is to publish that in July of this year. Once that becomes final, it will eventually be considered for addition to the standards version advancement process. But because of we shifted the timeline for the USCDI version 2 consideration because those exchange standards, the US Core and the CCDA exchange standards, took additional time to update, and they're in the process of being validated now or very soon. And because those standards are required to implement USCDI version 2, we delayed that period for consideration for SFAP until May of this year, at which time we expect to have those other two standards updated as well. And so hopefully by June of this year, USCDI and those other standards will be a part of the SFAP and shortly thereafter become available for update in systems. And so this whole process repeats itself. USCDI version 3 won't be considered until next year when the next version of the implementation guides for FHIR and for CCDA get updated to reflect the USCDI V3 standards.
Thank you, Al. Let's go ahead and take Mark and Clem's questions now, and then there's more that's stacked up in the chat. We are also sensitive to time. We have public comment at 55 minutes after the hour.
Okay, I don't know who's first, Mark or is it me?
I think Mark actually had a hand up first.
Go ahead.
We'll jump in quickly. Alice, goes back to your discussion about sort of prioritization criteria. You mentioned that exchange is occurring by both FHIR and CCDA, so looking for minimal burden, modest sort of incremental increases. At the end of 2022, we have certification for FHIR APIs before. Does that impending shift on the timeline influence the thinking at all on sort of the incremental approach?
It doesn't, because the FHIR API standard will apply to only USCDI version 1. The API requirements, if we're talking about the G10 criteria, will have to exchange USCDI version 1 by API.
I would encourage everybody who's thinking about this and just scratching their head about it to recognize that as a work group, we have the opportunity to comment on appropriate policy levers for any future policy actions, including certification. So I would just encourage us to not get too confused by the current mismatch and just contemplate what kinds of policy recommendations we might want to make as recommendations.
Clem?
Clem?
Yeah, I've got a variety of comments, but maybe I shouldn't deal with them all. The big one is that in the last release version 3, I think there was at least half, two thirds of the comments were sort of don't do too much, moderate effect, low effect, moderate effect. And, you know, this has been going on for 30 years. So I don't know why we're so hesitant when it's not even regulatory. So that's one question. Or why are we so shy? And just remember that having all these structure standards does nothing for interchange if everybody uses different codes. It does nothing. And we faced that in Indiana. You know, when we, you know, I was so happy we had HL7. It didn't do V2. Everybody was using it in their hospitals. But when you cross the hospitals, it was gibberish. So we got to remember these codes are really important. So the question is, why are we so shy?
Well, so I wouldn't say that we were shy, Clem, but the impact of a new requirement is very broad, very widespread, felt by all. And we have, even though these are voluntary updates, if a system volunteers to update, they have to do it the way that we say that we have, they have to meet the standards that are laid out. And so we are mindful of the regulatory impact or the impact of making these changes. We want to take that modest approach so that we can encourage this incremental update. If we were to come out and put all 150 level 2 data elements into version 3, I don't think there's anybody out there that would want to take that on until they had to.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
just as a reminder to the work group, we are the work group who's doing the analysis and recommendations back to the full HITACH and ultimately back to the ONC. So if there are areas where as a work group we think that we could have better alignment between policy levers for floor and ceiling, that's certainly within our remit to contemplate recommendations. So, you know, rather than beat Al up right now, maybe we can just start doing some early thinking about what potential policy recommendations we might want to make.
I want to take back something that I said, because there was two of the things that showed up, the radiology reports and the clinic reports. That's a nice big gift to clinicians. So thank you for that. And that's not teeny. So that's a good one. But the other question I had was about the interaction between FHIR. I think you said something about it and USCD. I thought FHIR already requires certain code systems in certain fields. And then FHIR is required by the federal regs, I thought. So how do they interact?
The content is defined by, is at least partially defined by USCDI. The content must include at least USCDI version 1 in the FHIR in the FHIR criteria, which we can go into more details about it. But it is the means by which USCDI is exchanged. One means by which USCDI is exchanged, and so the FHIR has to be able to. There are some changes to USCDI that when incorporated into the FHIR standard would allow for those changes to be
exchanged. Just one more small one. SDOH is now listed under procedures and conditions, I think, but the prepare survey is probably one of the more powerful approaches. There's all other ones, but there's no way to fit that in as it's now listed, I think, or is there?
It's one of the SDOH assessment claims. We can talk about the details of that, but the prepare is an assessment instrument, which would fall under the SDOH assessment.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Grace?
I just wanted to ask for clarification on the slide, USCDI version update process on 2022. There's the public comment V3. It's a navy box. And I just want to say that there was confusion that I noted from patient and consumer communities where it asks for public comment. And there's actually two processes, if I understand correctly, the general comments that can be submitted under the USCDI website, and then the on-deck submission part for suggesting new data elements. So that's not very clear here. So I'm wondering if it's worth clarifying that.
Sure. Good point. And to your the public comments, we're looking for public feedback through the USCDI website. And we did make that clear in our publication of both the USCDI standard document itself, the published PDF, as well as the companion standards bulletin, which we also published last Thursday. So we specifically say, go to the website, make your feedback and comment there. If you want to get started early and submit something for USCDI version 4, go for it. You can do that now. But we're looking at comments and we're looking at comments and feedback directly on the USCDI website.
So Steve Eichner, I'm going to hold your hand for just a minute here and go to the next slide. We do need to make it to public comment in 4 minutes. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. Go to the next slide, please. These are the list of meetings that we have laid out week by week between now and the end of March. We really do need to complete our USCDI comment work by that time so that we can get it finalized and presented to the HITAC by April 13th. Recall that our recommendations then go to the HITAC where they are debated. Aaron and I will present them. Historically, they've been pretty well accepted at HITAC. But sometimes with comment, and then those get transmitted to the national coordinator. So we've got 9 meetings to get the first phase of our work done. Arian, you had some ideas for some focus groups. Do you want to mention those?
Yeah, so I think we should solicit input from the work group for some sub work groups that we might want to contemplate for focusing on particular areas. So in particular, you know, I think there's an obvious area for deep focus on USCDI versus a sub work group that could focus on the charge for the ISA and do a little bit of forward thought there. So we maybe have people who lean more ISA and people who lean more USCDI, obviously no limitations on attending or working on both sub work groups. And if there are particular areas of interest, it might be useful to indicate those areas of interest and just communicate via email to ONC staff and Stephen and myself. And we'll get you, we'll do some work offline and see what we can do to slot people into focused sub work groups. But again, I think at this point, it might be useful for people to start thinking about affiliation relative to deep focus on USCDI, and then maybe a small sub work group that can do forward-looking work on the charge for the ISA portion of our overall work. And then if you've got particular sub-focus areas, it would be useful to understand those so that we can do some offline work to see if we can slot people with the appropriate sub-work groups.
And the only adjustment I would make to that, Arian, would be to say that I hope that we have pretty much everyone on the work group focused deeply on USCDI over these next couple of months as we would do this work. But I agree with you that there are some people who have a particular interest in ISA issues that I think could potentially have some meetings during these 2 months. And then when we get to ISA as a whole work group, some pre-work might have been done that will make that work more efficient.
Completely agreed.
Great. So there have been some excellent comments coming in through the chat. I'd like to just check with the ONC team and Excel. I trust that everything that gets put in the chat directed to everyone is going to be captured and made part of the public record. I would also hope that the chat that was directed to the workgroup members alone would also be captured and made available to workgroup members. Can we count on you guys for that?
Yeah, I was going to say, if we could just remember for the work group and even the public, if you change the category when appropriate to everyone, then those comments are captured with the audio recording that will be posted on healthit.gov. And so if you just look for this particular meeting or any particular work group meeting, the recording will be there with the everyone chat. So I don't believe the host and panelists chats will show up. So it's really important that if you want everyone to see it and be part of the public record, that you change the category to everyone.
Great. Thank you. Let's go to public comment.
All right. And so we'll have a public comment period for every work group meeting. This is really an important step in our process. And so it's pretty easy of opportunity for the public to make comments. And all you have to do is raise your hand. There's a hand raise, a raise hand feature at the bottom of your screen if you're on Zoom. If you happen to be on the phone only, you would press star 9 to raise your hand. And then once I call upon you, you would press star 6 to unmute your phone. So let's see if there are any public comments in the queue. And I don't see any, so I'll turn it back to Arian and Stephen to continue the conversation.
Wonderful. And for those of you who are new to this, it's often the case that we have no public comments. It's always a little disappointing to me because I know a lot of people are out there listening. But so I really do want to encourage members of the public to feel free to comment. We really welcome that input. Let's see. So we have not gotten to the point today of clarifying exactly what we want you to focus on between now and our next meeting. But what we're going to do is we're going to start with our charges. And again, that just as a reminder, our very first charge, which is charge 1A, is to look at the new data classes and elements that were proposed in draft USCDI version 3. So that is where we are going to start our work. What we will do is the co-chairs will be having a meeting, a debrief with ONC just after this call, and we will try to put together and clarify a precise assignment for your homework, but you can assume that that's where we're going to start. So digging into those elements that were proposed in draft V3 and looking to see whether there are opportunities to refine them, to ask questions about them, to specify any appropriate data sets or value sets or standards. That is where we're going to be starting our work over this coming week. Arian, did you have anything else to
no,
add in closing?
I've got some ideas, but we just might want to think about those offline and then maybe get some more focused work groups or sub-work groups contemplated.
Any comments from work group members?
That fit in 2 minutes.
I think it was a good discussion.
Thank you for the kickoff.
Thank you. All right, maybe we should give back everybody a couple of minutes, and then we look forward to meeting with you frequently and often, and as much as you can bear.
Thank you all for your time and participation. Have a good day.
Thank you.
All right.